Coming up on show 702, we hear from Ford. They say just being electric is not good enough. But what do their words actually mean? We're going to find out. Stick around. Also on the show today, how much EV battery capacity was deployed last year? We've got the number. Also, VW's predictions for 2020, new plug-in hybrid from Citroën on sale now, and a Model S charging at a record speed. Plus, we're going to talk about a new 4x4 EV from Volkswagen. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily for Wednesday, the 19th of February. My name is Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story, so you don't have to. Thank you, as always, to MyEV.com for making this show with me. If you would like to find out more about them in the USA, cars with plug sockets on, if you're buying or selling or learning about them, things like warranties and other issues around them, check out MyEV.com. So last year, how much battery capacity was deployed around the world in newly sold EVs? Well, we've got the number. It was an increase of over 30% on 2018, according to the Adamas Intelligence web-based EV battery capacity and battery metals tracker report, says Green Car Congress. At a global level, battery electric vehicles had 95.6 gigawatt hours of battery capacity deployed. That is their term EVs, anything with a battery in, which, you know, you and I might not call that an EV. We'd kind of call it a soft hybrid, but bear with me. 95.6 gigawatt hours of battery capacity deployed globally. Pure EVs took 90% of that. Plug-in hybrids took the next 7%. And yeah, soft hybrids take up just 3%. A lot of hybrids on the road, but really using none of the battery capacity that's available in the world. That would be companies like Toyota, their whole argument for why we should all be driving soft hybrids for the next 10, 15, 20 years, because they say you can make so many more of these kind of cars, these soft hybrids, for the same battery capacity that you can make just one EV with. In fact, they'll say that buy one of their hybrids and it's got a 1-point-something kilowatt hour battery, it reduces emissions by XYZ, and actually you can make this many of them for the equivalent emissions reduced of a full EV. It's a very well thought out, well argued, and seemingly logical argument. They made it in Canada recently at a big event. It doesn't make sense though, because anything that we do that emits pollution, that emits gases, NOx and SOx, carbon dioxide, when we move from A to B, anything that comes out of the tailpipe cannot be good. You can make all these arguments that you like about, well, we can make X many hybrid cars for every one full battery electric vehicle because the batteries are so small. I don't want to hear it. You're just trying to sell more of the cars that you know how to make. Why not deploy some of the incredibly talented engineers within these companies, all of these car companies that are making soft hybrids? Why not let them have a go at making a great EV? You know, talking about that, actually, Ford did that with their battery electric vehicle team a couple of years ago. What they came up with was the Ford Mach-E, and that is the subject of today's podcast, but we'll get to that in a moment. First of all, some news from VW. Well, Volkswagen Group have released their Mobility 2020 presentation / study. They are looking at what's going to happen in the year ahead of us. There's lots of points in here, but I've pulled out the ones that relate to EVs. More than 30,000 pre-bookers have registered in advance of the ID3, and this year they can take delivery of the car. That means Volkswagen Group's vision of building e-cars for the masses finally becomes a reality. Further, fully electric models for the ID family will be coming in future years. By 2029, they say 75 pure electric cars. I hate that. I hate anything that's more than a couple of years away. When you start to say we're going to be doing this in 2029, there's no comeback. In 2029, if they haven't done what they promised, and I, you know, I bring it up on the podcast when we're doing, you know, episode, I don't know, 3,000, 4,000 and something. What are they going to say? So look, I kind of hate those long-term predictions, but that's what they're saying. Back to closer to home in 2020, their report says the first two Volkswagen plants in China, designed purely for EVs, will begin series production. They are in Anting and Foshan. The SAIC Volkswagen collaboration and the FAW Volkswagen joint venture is going to produce around 600,000 EVs between them on the MEB platform. Made in China MEB cars will be gradually expanded to 15 different cars. cars by 2025. Now that's a time frame we like to look at. Here in 2020, though, stricter emission standards are coming into force in India, opening a new chapter in India's passenger car market. They've actually skipped one emissions standard stage. They're going straight from Euro 4 to Euro 6, missing out 5 in between. All VW Group models based on that are compliant, with the third biggest emissions in the world of CO2. India do need to get on board with EVs. Who are number one and number two? No surprises if you didn't know. China is number one, USA is number two for CO2 emission. Finally, in California, cars with low CO2 emissions can now use the HOV lanes, the high occupancy vehicle lanes, since this year, even with just one person in. These lanes are reserved for cars with at least two occupants, but if your vehicle falls below the emission levels, you get a sticker, get to use it on your own. I'll pop a link to the VW Mobility 2020 presentation if you'd like to read the full thing in the show notes. Citroën has officially opened the order books for the new C5 Aircross. It's a plug-in hybrid. It's on sale in the UK. Two different grades, the Flare and the Flare Plus. Pricing from £35,340 and £36,815 respectively. Customer deliveries begin middle of this year. Says Electrive, the plug-in hybrid offers 165 kilowatts of power. About half of that is the electric motor. The battery has 13.2 kilowatt hours and a range of 50 kilometres. How fast can your EV charge? Mine, 22. Yeah, I'm winning no battles there. It charges at 22 kilowatts AC. It's a Renault Zoe, which is nice if all you've got is a 22 kilowatt AC post. It actually beats every other car out there for AC charging. However, let's talk DC fast charging. And a Tesla Model S was recently seen on a YouTube video charging at, this is cool, a whopping 181 kilowatts during a supercharging session. Have you heard of or watched the video channel Eli Burton, My Tesla Adventure? He made a video of driving his Model S to the Fremont mothership where Tesla make their vehicles. He has a Raven edition Model S performance, and so it's got a 100 kilowatt hour battery pack, and of course it's the new Raven one as well. He drove it down to 5% and then turned up at Fremont. Now look, normally most people don't go down that low to 5%. Most people would feel comfortable maybe 8 or 10%. What do you reckon? Go in terms of making sure that chargers aren't out of order. But if you're going to go down to 5%, I mean, going anywhere, Tesla HQ, probably there are worse places that you could go. You'd imagine, like, you know, even if the superchargers at Fremont were out of order, I'm sure you could blag a plug socket from reception or something. It's where they make the cars. But no, the superchargers weren't out of order. They're V3 superchargers. And plugging in his Raven Model S, he got 181. Well done to him on the new V3 supercharger. Of course, Model 3s can peak at 250 if the battery is nice and toasty warm and you arrive with a low state of charge. Staying with Tesla, and a new bill introduced in Colorado is going to allow electric vehicle manufacturers to bypass the state's direct sales ban, says Electrek. And that's good news for Rivian, who are looking to follow Tesla's direct sales model. But at the moment, Rivian don't fall under the exception as Tesla in Colorado law. So they need this new bill to actually pass. And that's because Colorado's really important for Rivian. It's one of the states where EV buyers are pretty popular, comes in fourth place in per capita EV sales, as Electrek. It's the kind of place as well where Colorado residents would like the kind of trucks and SUVs that Rivian's going to be making. Well, how about this? This is interesting. You know that Tesla are obsessed with rationalization, with efficiency, with making everything vertically integrated, as simple as possible. Now, they've sent out a letter, I imagine it's an email, a letter to owners, which I saw on the TMC forums, and I'll just read it to you. We are excited to announce the opening of our newest service center in Santa Ana, designated for Model 3. Starting today, to improve the service experience for all owners, Santa Ana will only schedule Model 3 owners, while Costa Mesa will only schedule S and X. All other service centres in the area continue to serve all models. You can book your appointment on the app, and chances are that you'll get a mobile technician come to you. But if you do go to Santa Ana, you better have a Model 3. That's really interesting. Like, you know, we know they make everything as simple as they possibly can, down to one screen in the car. They fit as many of the same bits in all of their cars as possible, even down to the service centres only making them specialists on one particular model. It kind of makes sense as well, because if you are obsessed with efficiency and getting things done as quick as possible, having an entire team of people that are super trained on one model, rather than, you know, because the S, you've got to learn stuff. The S has evolved over the years, so there's going to be different things in, you know, over the last 8 years or so. Different S's have got different technology in. The X, you know, last 4 or 5 years hasn't really changed as much as the S. But saying that, you've still got to, there's a lot you would have to learn as a Tesla technician to make sure that you are an expert on everything. Much easier just to have to be the authority on one model. And of course, this isn't going to roll out everywhere, because somewhere like Orange County does have a disproportionately higher number of Model 3s flying around. The user AE Dennis on TMC said, that's been the plan with Santa Ana and Costa Mesa for a while, but I'm glad to see it publicised. It looks like that's been on the cards. Okay, here's the part of the podcast that I mentioned at the beginning of the show, the headline, really. It's one of the senior managers at Ford, about as high as they get with EVs. His name is Ted Canis. He's the Director of Global Electrification at Ford Motor Company. And we found this on electrive.com, which is an industry website. And so I'm just going to read you some of the quotes that he said to them. I'll put a link in the show notes if you want to read the whole interview. But these are just the actual quotes from Ted Canis at Ford. Right, first of all is on what is going to be powering our cars going into the future. I quote, in Germany, many think that fuel cell will come soon. Regardless of whether I speak to French, Canadians or Chinese, there are no concerns about the battery because customers are waiting for hydrogen. However, battery technology is now available, is constantly evolving. Charging is becoming easier. The requirements of the government are moving in this direction, and so are our competitors. There is currently a critical mass moving towards battery electric cars, end quote. Really interesting quote that I wanted to read you there. Firstly, obviously they've been doing their focus groups and research. There is this misconception out there that hydrogen and fuel cell cars are in some way the answer, the magic wand. And he says, look, no, it's just not. Wherever I go, people think that that's going to be the answer. It's not the case. Battery technology is not some future thing. It's here now. It's on the roads and there's critical mass. I love that phrase. Okay, moving on. And this is interesting about the kind of people buying the Mach-E. He says, I quote, we have a lot of new customers who haven't owned a Ford. One of the dealers I spoke to has 12 reservations, all new customers, and they're 10 years younger, end quote. So the average Ford Mach-E, Mustang Mach-E buyer is 10 years younger than the average Ford buyer. That is amazing. He also talks about the sound of an EV. I don't see eye to eye to him on this one, but I'll read you it out. I quote, our experience has shown that sound is not an obstacle. We were on the road in the USA with prototypes of the electric F-150. Nobody missed the sound of a V8. This shocked us almost more with the Mustang. On request, though, we will have a very authentic sound in the Mustang Mach-E, end quote. I don't think they need to do that. I don't know about you. I come into contact with a lot of people. You, maybe an EV driver or EV curious, people in the industry. Every day on my social media, on email, every day I'm talking to people. And you know what? You know, for years now, no one said to me, you know what? I love my EV, but I really wish it made the sound of a fossil car. No one has ever said that. Now, maybe their focus groups. Look, Ford know their buyers better than I do. That's without doubt. So maybe they feel the need to put this kind of fake car sound in. I really wish they wouldn't. Porsche have done it with the Taycan. Have you heard those videos on YouTube? It's not to my personal taste, but I imagine some people would like it. But they've gone quite heavy on the fake acceleration sound. I like to hear the sound of the motors in an EV. That for me is a cool sound. However, I'm going to add it into the Mustang Mach-E. I don't think it's needed. I disagree with you there, Ford. I don't think anyone is going to not buy the car because it doesn't sound like a fossil gobbler. Moving on, this, we start to get into some real juicy stuff here with him. He says this, and I quote, the entire software can receive over-the-air updates so that the car stays fresh over the years. We want to offer our customers a modern user experience that develops over time, as they know from websites and apps, end quote. That is so good to hear from a company like Ford, from the main man, the head honcho in the electric department. It's awesome to hear a car company talking like a software company. I've been banging on about this for ages and saying, stop thinking of Tesla as a car company. Don't think of them as they are an energy company. They're not a solar company, not a storage company, not a car company. If anything, they are a Californian tech company. as obsessed with software with hardware, and Ford saying the same thing here. Look, software is so important. How about the software that you'll actually use, though? He talks about the Ford Pass app. The Ford Pass app, for European customers at least, gives access to 125,000 charging points on the new Motion network and Ionity. Aren't Ford an investor in Ionity? I'm like 99% sure. Please let me be right on that. I think Ford are investing in Ionity. So the HPC chargers, the ones that... Because some of the Mustang Mach-E models will go up to 150 kilowatts charge speed. Not all of them, I gather. Some of them had, at launch, wasn't there an asterisk or two, and some of them had pretty slow speeds? But anyway, some of them, maybe the big battery one, would do 150. That's nice and fast. And using the Ford Pass app means that you can make it even easier. He didn't talk about America here, but this is a European interview, so I'm sure that in the US he would talk about Electrify America or something similar. He also said, and I quote, "With EVs, the software is at least as important as the hardware. Now we have a vehicle in which almost all the modules can be updated. So why shouldn't we take advantage of this to provide improvements to the customer? And of course, for that, we will constantly develop the software," end quote. Again, it makes me so happy to hear a big, long, established car company like Ford, the ones that, okay, over time, I have been critical of, to be slow to pick up EVs. It's so good to hear them talking like this and saying that they're going to update the software over the air and it's going to get better. It's exactly what we want from connected cars. And finally, he said this, "The battery cells come from LG Chem in Poland. From there, they are shipped to Mexico, where we assemble them into battery packs. That's next to the production line for the Mustang Mach-E. Until recently, we only had a few hybrids in Europe, but we have been using lithium-ion batteries since 2012, end quote. So clearly saying there, look, we're not newbies to lithium-ion batteries, but did you pick that up? They make them in Poland from LG Chem. So gold standard, right? Some of the best batteries or cells. But then they ship them to Mexico. I mean, that's even worse than Tesla having to make them all at the Nevada Gigafactory and get them all transported via road and rail to California. It's a lot further, though. And any car company having to ship batteries halfway round the world, from Poland to Mexico. You know, I'm not a million miles away from Poland here in GB, and we honeymooned in Mexico. I remember that journey, and it's a long one. That's suboptimal, and they must know that. I'm sure that their supply chain experts at Ford are doing absolutely the best thing that they possibly can for this car. I'm sure that on their roadmap is making the cars, or making the cells, closer to where they make the cars. In a way, you've got to look at the model that Tesla are doing, Giga Shanghai, Giga Berlin, all under one roof, cell production, battery production, car production. Elon said, we'll never make the same mistake again of making the cells away from the cars. Interesting, actually. All of the headlines from China seem to have gone away now with Tesla China. The factory opened and started making Model 3s a year to the day. It's like delivering them a year to the day since the groundbreaking ceremony. There is a second building being built, by the way. They're now building cell production at Giga Shanghai. That doesn't get as many headlines, but equally as important. Some would say, you know, more so if you look at the grand scheme of things. But either way, that's ongoing at the moment. And that's going to be, you know, a big deal from mid this year. I think cell production starts. Correct me if I'm wrong. Okay, moving on. That was really interesting. And thank you to Ford for providing so many quotes. And also Electrive for putting the full interview online as a transcript. And just really, really hopeful signs in there. And that, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt. And let's see when it's out at the end of the year what the Mach-E is really like to drive. Quick sidebar, a great fully charged video with Robert Llewellyn. Went to have a look at it in London. You can see it too till the 21st of this month. Two more days at Marble Arch in London. They didn't let him drive it. Really frustrating. They stuck him in the back, which is, you know, it could be the back seat of any car in the world. It was just a shot facing backwards of him talking to the main man from Ford. Interesting, but come on, even if you've only got like 20 of these prototypes made, come on, it's fully charged. It's Robert Llewellyn. Get him insured, let him drive it, and we want to hear his thoughts. It wasn't great. I mean, his presentation of it was fantastic, by the way, but in terms of what they were allowed to do, He couldn't have a fiddle, couldn't have a play. And it's like, come on, Ford, we're not that far away from the car hitting the road. And it's like, you know, I'm not saying every journalist out there should get the chance, but one or two of the really big EV channels... Worth having a look, though. Go and have a look. It's a really good video. Okay, let's talk Singapore. After declaring its ambition to phase out fossil cars in 2040, Singapore is making EVs more attractive from next year, says StraitsTimes.com. In his budget speech yesterday, Deputy Prime Minister Heng Swee Keat laid out a number of measures. A couple of them included things like a new tax rebate and surcharges based on vehicles' emissions levels, an early adoption incentive scheme. From next year, up to $20,000 equivalent, capped per vehicle. That's a rebate. Wow, that's huge. Wow, $20,000 rebate? That's huge. Most countries are a few thousand equivalent local currency. But that's amazing. Well done, Singapore. And I'll put the full article in the show notes if you want to read about all the incentives they're putting in place. Finally, Volkswagen is on the verge of giving the green light to a new ID-branded SUV. It's going to be rivaling the BMW iX3 and the Mercedes-Benz EQB. According to autocar.co.uk, it's a full electric SUV based on the MEB platform, and they've called it, for now, I'm sorry about this, the Rugged. R-U-G-G-D-Z. Come on, VW. You've had your fun. You're drunk. Go home. So they had the ID Buzz with lots of Zs, and the ID Cross, and the ID Vision with lots of Zs in the middle. And now they're making a 4x4, which all they'll tell us is called the Rugged, which they say is a play on the word rugged. Yeah, no, Sherlock. Anyway, it's at preliminary stages of development, and it's going to be out by 2023, part of 30 strong lineup, isn't it? We said earlier today, no, it's more like 75 by the end of the decade, 30 of them by the middle of the decade, though. Right, question of the week this week. I'd love to hear from you. Are you happy to pay extra for add-on features or apps for your connected car after you've bought it or the car that you buy? Would you like that to be the car that is the car that you own? In other words, do you mind the car companies that make your car still having the ability to have a little fiddle even after you've bought it? This comes after Tesla will allow people to, who've got the standard range plus Model 3, because it's got heated seats in the back, it's got the hardware but not turned on because you didn't buy the expensive one, but for $300 they'll turn it on for you. Do you like the way that this is going, or don't you like this trend? Also, on the flip side as well, people have had things like supercharging turned off on their Tesla if the car gets damaged. Tesla's saying they don't want, they've updated their terms and conditions, they don't want any damaged cars using their supercharging network. I understand that. I get that. It's very reasonable. Nobody wants to be put at danger. But also, they're turning off DC fast charging, even on third-party networks. You can only slow charge your Tesla with AC at home. You bought the car. And they dip into it because it's connected and turn these things off in the name of safety. So, what do you think about all this? Let me know. You can email me, hello@evnewsdaily.com. Leave a comment on the YouTube show. There are 235 patrons of the podcast. Thank you to those who keep me going, my premium partners. Phil Roberts of Electric Future, EF.energy, if you're interested in the big commercial solar installs that he does. Brad Crosby, thank you. Avid Technology. And the latest name to add to the list is Bright Smith. You can check him out at brightsmithgroup.com for clean tech talents. There are 701 previous shows in the archive. If you can leave a little review on Apple Podcasts, it really helps me out to grow the show. Have a wonderful day. Catch you tomorrow. And remember, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.